Hi, EM Social Media Files. I'm Lisa Fisher. I'm a practicing emergency physician in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. I'm extremely interested in emergency medicine wellness, and together with a handful of other emergency physicians across the country, we've put together this year's Canadian Emergency Medicine Wellness Week. Today's post on day three features Dr. Ken Mile, an EM doc and chief of staff from Exeter, Ontario. You've probably heard of Ken via his extremely successful podcast, The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine, where he's otherwise also known as Bat Doc. Typically, it's Ken who interviews other well-known emergency physicians on different EBM topics, but today the table has turned. It's Bat Doc's turn to answer questions on wellness and emergency medicine. And I'm going to apologize ahead of time for not having a witty tune to accompany this intro, as those who follow Ken know that he's an extremely musically inclined person. But without further ado, here's our rapid-fire interview with Dr. Ken Mile. Hi, Ken. Thanks for joining me.
I think it's hilarious that somebody has referred to me as musically inclined. Anybody who's listened to my intros to my podcast and my attempt at singing would say, oh, this guy, he has no music in his system. But I could have said, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, Bat Doc. And you've unmasked me. You've given away my not-so-secret identity.
Well, Ken, I don't think it's a surprise to anyone that you're Bat Doc. Anyone who follows emergency medicine social media has probably heard your name before. But I was wondering, what's your full name, Ken?
My full name? Oh, it's William Kenneth Milne, or Kenny, or Kenny Jr., or Little Ken.
Little Ken. Okay, and where are you from?
London, Ontario.
And may I ask how old you are?
I am 51 and two-thirds.
Two-thirds. I like the details. Ken, can you share a little bit of details from your personal life for our audience?
It depends, Lisa. How personal do you want to get?
We can keep it PG-26.
Okay, we don't want to lose the iTunes rating. Okay, so I'm married to my soulmate, Barb. Yes, that's Ken and Barbie for over 25 years. I have three wonderful children, a dog and a bunny rabbit.
A bunny rabbit.
Yes.
And if you can reflect back, Ken, into your teenage self, can you describe yourself in three words?
Oh, this is time travel, so I'll throw in some sound effects. Diddly-doo, diddly-doo, diddly-doo. Three words. Swimmer, nerd, farm boy.
Okay, I'm sure that'll spark a lot of reflection in people. And after you grew up in London, Ontario, where'd you go to med school and for the rest of your education?
So my medical school was University of Calgary, class of 95, the Quokkas, which is a small marsupial that eats its own poop. I did residency in family medicine at Western University, and then after a few years of being in practice, I challenged and passed the CCFP EM exam.
Cool. And so how many years in practice have you been?
22.
So a bit of time travel again, but maybe not as far back as high school. But reflecting on your first 5 years in practice, Ken, what can you recall as being one of the most challenging things?
I'm just glad we're out of high school, because that was an awkward 5 years, because we used to go to grade 13 in Ontario. So that was 5 years of a lot of awkwardness. I mean, total nerd, played the clarinet, you know, liked science, not the cool kid. Anyways, but you first 5 years of practice. Okay. One word for me would be the most challenging thing was sleep. Because I was a new rural family doctor in a small town where there was no shortage of work. And so I worked Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in the office, 24-hour ER shift on Thursday, full day in the office Friday, Saturday, 24-hour ER shift, and Sunday I rounded on my own inpatients, post-call, and went home to sleep.
Wow, that makes me feel like I have nothing to complain about.
I'm not advocating it for it. I'm just saying I did that for about 4 or 5 years.
And that must have been when you were starting your family, if I'm doing the math correctly.
Oh, they told me there'd be no math, but you are correct.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of strategies did you implement to keep working in this high-stress job over the years?
Well, you know, over the years, if you can find a life partner, whoever that life partner is, if you're lucky enough to find that life partner, that's what's done it for me. I would never have been able to accomplish what I've been able to accomplish. And I wouldn't be as fulfilled as I am without having someone to travel this journey with.
Oh, I hope Barb is listening today. That's really nice to say.
external to that, exercise has been my socialization and my camaraderie. It's been my mental health. It's been my spiritual well-being. It is my church.
Yeah. And because it's, you don't only practice clinical emergency medicine, you've taken on, I imagine, many huge projects, including your blog, which is known internationally and really successful. So what's given you the energy?
I really like what I do. And I've always wanted to be a teacher. I wanted to be a science teacher. And here I get to be a doctor and a science teacher. And with the miracle of modern technology and the internet, which has shrunk the world, I can have that voice at a very, very low cost to get onto a platform and then interact and speak with like-minded people around the world.
It sounds like you're really working from a place of passion, which must be a great feeling. Now that you're 30-esque years in practices, you mentioned that one of the original challenges you had was sleep. How have things changed for you?
Well, I'm getting a little bit more sleep, but professionally, I had to learn that I couldn't change the world all by myself. But what I could do is I could make a difference on an individual basis with one patient at a time. And so learning that and coming from that end and realizing that every patient I see, I can have an NNT of one. Every patient I see, I have the opportunity to help that one patient. And then it's sort of ballooned from there, as opposed to when I was younger, I thought, oh, you know, the whole system has to be changed, rather than focusing in on just changing that one little thing, having an impact on that one individual. And then the world can change from that. And so I had to learn that professionally. And, you know, the system will chew you up and spit you out. So I don't want to be that person. And I would recommend setting limits early and focusing in on changing what you can and do what you love and don't worry about the things that you can't change.
That's pretty sound advice, Ken. You know, another thing that I wanted to ask you about is most recently you posted a really personal talk where you were the keynote speaker at an Australian conference, and I think the topic was burnout. And during your talk, it was actually live streamed to your dad's hospital bed, also a Dr. Ken Malm, if I'm not mistaken. You said on your blog that you spoke to him only one last time following that keynote talk, and he passed away later on that week. That must have been, I can only imagine what an incredibly personal experience this is. And yet you chose to share it with the world. So what prompted you to share this experience, Ken?
It sort of all unfolded. I didn't plan it. This invitation had come about 18 months prior, and I was doing some research in the area of wellness and mindfulness for mitigating burnout. And when ASIM reached out to me and asked me if I would be a keynote speaker, they specifically asked me if I would talk about burnout. And their theme was being on the edge, because it was in Perth, Australia, and that's on the edge of the continent. Mm-hmm. So I was going to go and give this talk about being on the edge of burnout. And well, that sounds really cool. And I was really looking forward to it. Unfortunately, in the fall, my dad got critically ill. And we knew early on that it wasn't a matter of if he was going to pass away, it was a matter of when, and we wanted to see as much quality of life and quantity of life, but in particular quality of life as possible. And my dad and I, me being a physician and him being the physician, and that's why I'm Ken Jr. or Little Ken, because he was always Big Ken or Ken Sr., that we'd be on this journey together, and we wouldn't get into catastrophic thinking, and we would just look at it as another journey that we could take together. And we started doing that, and I got to hang out with my dad more than I've hung out with him for the last 10 years, probably almost on a daily basis, as he went through this incredibly challenging life event with dignity, of course. And it was hard. And then it came up to the point where, oh, I've got to be going to Australia. And he was getting worse. And I asked him, do you want me to go? I don't have to go. I can all, there'll always be another conference another year. And he was like, no, you have to go. I'm proud of you. I think it's a great thing and a great honor that you've received. And we sat down and started working on my talk, the final components of it, from his hospital bed. And he gave me useful insights and gave me advice on slide design. And we had a great time putting that together. And he said, you need to go. And I said, I'm only going to go if you promise to watch, and I will live stream it to your hospital bed, and I'll give you a shout out. And so that's what I did.
Wow, that's your dad sounds like such an inspiration, such a strong person.
Oh, he's just amazing. And of course, it's always suffering from the I'll never be good enough and I'll never measure up. And I realize I have issues, but I'm not going to pretend that I got through this unscathed. It was very, very difficult. And I broke down a number of times through the process. And one of the most loneliest times or times where I felt the most useless was after I visited him in the hospital and I headed out to go to the parking lot, and I couldn't find my car. I had no idea where I was parked, and it was cold and it was dark and it was raining. And I vividly remember walking around for 15 or 20 minutes, rain just streaming down on me, tears running down my face, going, I can't even find my own car. And clicking, with my clicker, walking around, holding my hand in the air, going, where's my car? Right? And I found it and I sat down and I dried myself off and came home.
Wow. Yeah, because it must be super hard being the sandwich generation, because presumably, you're being a son, you're also still a husband, a dad, a clinician, an academic, a blog poster. I'm sure there's roles that I'm even missing that you're carrying at the same time, but there you are, not even able to find your car in a parking lot.
Well, as a scientist, as a physician, I wanted to cure my dad, of course. But as a son, I just wanted to be the grieving son. And here I was, the physician in the family, in a large family, trying to navigate that. And sometimes I would turn off, the emotions and try to be clinical, and that would be somewhat protective, but it also delayed the healing process.
One thing that we're trying to highlight in this year's Canadian Emergency Medicine Week is the humanity in our profession. And I thank you for sharing that really difficult moment you went through. I think it's tempting, and as Bat Doc, after all, who you are, to sort of pretend like we're always doing awesome and rocking at everything. But you wrote in your website that you had a hard time going through this and that you were not okay. However, that you came back. So, what did you mean by saying that you weren't okay? Can you share a little bit?
Well, I think it's really important to let everyone know that it's okay not to be okay. I mean, I was struggling to meet all of life's demands, and you need to acknowledge that you can't do it all. And I'm certainly not a superhero. I'm a flawed individual stumbling through life. I make mistakes. I'm nowhere near perfect. I mean, ask my wife, Barb. She'll say I'm trying, very trying. But, my heart's in the right place and my intentions were honorable. And I just got through it day by day. But I wasn't okay. I was suffering. I was in pain. And it was difficult.
So, what helped you find your way back from this challenging experience, even if we can call it back, because obviously your reality changes a lot after going through that kind of loss.
Well, I'm getting to a new normal as one thing, and it's a journey. And I just took things moment by moment and day by day and realize that control is an illusion, and the only control I really have is my response to life events, not what life is going to throw me, and realize that this too shall pass, and it will get better, and it is getting better. I mean, it gets better every day. But there were some amazing people that helped me through it. I did not stand up on my own. I relied on my spouse, and we have great kids and stuff like that. But I had this FOMED world now. I had all these FOMED friends, and there was these little acts of kindness, like Brian Goldman from CBC White Coat Black Art. He would just check in on with me every once in a while and say, "Are you doing okay, Ken?" And there's an ICU nurse in the States that I've never met face to face called the Brow of Justice, and she was there anytime I just needed to vent. And one of the kindest things actually was one of my mentors and heroes, and that's Dr. Alan Drummond. And he was amazing. And one of the kindest things he did is I've worked every year since I've graduated Christmas. And it's just something that I've always done. And so for the last 22 years, I've always worked Christmas Day. And my dad would understand, and my family would understand. And he, being a physician, he did lots of holidays and on call. But he would always call me on Christmas to wish me Merry Christmas. Oh, I didn't think this was going to be tough again. And Alan Drummond called me just to say hi.
I know Alan a little bit as well because he lives not far from me, and we've corresponded social media and we've met each other in person, and that doesn't surprise me one bit. But
It was like a 30-second phone call when I was on call on Christmas Day. He goes, "Hey Ken, it's Al Drummond. Just checking in on you. How you doing?"
yeah, I can tell that really moves you, and just the kindness of friends and even maybe some quote unquote strangers, but not strangers, is sometimes really amazing how some people can always look outwards and support other people.
Yeah, those little things of kindness. My mom gave me my dad's winter coat, so now every day I go out and I've got a hug.
Ah, oh, that's nice. Did you have to change anything like work-wise to help you during this difficult time? I mean, it doesn't sound like you were burnt out if we go by the definition, but obviously going through something like this is super hard. And were you able to keep all these plates in the air?
No, I have a great community of physicians that I work with. And when my dad was going through part of his illness and when some of the stuff hit the proverbial fan, I just reached out to them and they said, "Sure, what can I cover for you?" Without a moment's hesitation, just like we'd all do for each other, I hope. And they did it for me.
You know, Ken, we know, like, as you've explained, the nature of our profession takes a huge toll on our physical well-being. I think you said that exercise was kind of how you, what fueled you in some ways. You know, given today, however, we're talking about living in the sandwich generation and managing, you know, expectations as a, you know, at work, also outside of work, and with family, and also dealing with sometimes helping your own parents go through difficult times. Can you talk to me a little bit about some nutrition strategies that you've learned over the years to help mitigate the stress?
I'm just glad we're off all the emotional stuff. Whew. And let's get into nutrition. And it's okay to be vulnerable. I think by talking about it and by having stuff like this go out and by doing the keynote address, I wanted to show people that, you know what, it's okay to be vulnerable too. It's not a sign of weakness. It's actually a sign of strength. At least I hope people interpret it that way. So, food, fuel up. You want to know how I fuel up for a shift?
How do you fuel up for a shift, Ken?
I like eggs, toast, and coffee in the morning. Off I go.
Yeah, and what if it's a night shift?
Well, I'm trying really hard not to do night shifts because I'm on the other side of 50.
Yeah. Does your group have a policy to, you know, offset shifts over 50?
We do not.
Just kind of a rule that you guys make accommodations for each other, or?
Yeah, we're a bit of a family, so we try to help each other out. And as we move through our careers, we manage our human resources appropriately.
Oh, that's nice. And okay, so what if you're on shift? What are you eating if you have time? And you should have time.
Oh yeah, I know. You need to fuel up and you need to take moments and you need to breathe and you need to walk out of the department. You know, unless somebody's dying, you can take a few minutes. So I actually take a Vega vanilla shake with me to start sipping on through the day, and I spike it with iced coffee from Starbucks. And so I get my vegetables, I get my protein, I get my carbs, and I get my caffeine. And I need to keep my caffeine at therapeutic levels.
Ah, that explains a lot, actually. And I like the product placement there. I've never heard of Vega, but sounds like that's a good combo of, like you said.
I thought you were going to say you'd never heard of Starbucks. And I'm thinking, you're in Ottawa. Can't you look at all four corners on the street?
Right. Okay, so maybe I should ask Barb this question, but what's the best thing you can cook to keep fueled up outside of work?
I am really good with pancakes as long as it's the instant just add water stuff.
I'm just going to ask if it was from scratch. Come on.
There's only so much room up there, and you put something else in, it's going to fall out. I'm really good at eggs. That's my thing. I'm especially good at making egg in the holes. I don't know if you know what that is.
Oh, yeah, I know what that is.
I was breakfast dad, and I was really good at making lots of great stuff for kids in the morning.
Yeah, eggs in the hole. That's a favorite in my household, also. So, a couple final questions. Can you tell me what the best sandwich eating experience you've ever had, Ken?
Oh, we weren't going to get personal, but okay. So the best personal sandwich experience I've ever had. Well, there was this sandwich that was made at this little market in London. It's closed now, unfortunately, but they'd have this chicken breast with an apple chutney, and it was on this big, fresh, warmed up Kaiser bun with honey mustard. Oh, I ordered it every single time I went there. I'm salivating just thinking about it.
I feel the longing in your voice. Yeah.
Oh, the desire. It was so good.
Oh, there's nothing like an awesome sandwich. Can I share mine quickly?
Please do.
I got to study for a year in France as an undergrad student, and the campus I ended up by luck was on the Mediterranean. And they had this little sandwich shack there, and you could order like a baguette with like all the good French stuff, tons of melted cheese, and then they would fill that sandwich with fries. And you would sit on a rock over the Mediterranean and just like this best sandwich ever. I hadn't thought about that until I actually asked you the question. Thanks for bringing that back.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate, Ken, you taking time out of your busy life to do this recording for Emergency Medicine Wellness Week. We super appreciate your honesty and sharing again this personal journey. I hope that people found this helpful and really, I agree with Ken that admitting your vulnerabilities or that we're not always superhuman is an important thing, for you personally and also to model to others. And thanks for your honesty, Ken.
Happy to do it.
One thing I just wanted to end on a bit of a bright note, and I know I said that you're musically inclined, which you didn't agree with, but I would, coming from someone who's way less musically inclined, I think you have to take the compliment. But what's your anthem? What's like the song that really pumps you up for work when you're on your way in?
Oh, like you just have to pick anything from the 1980s. I mean, its canon is so large and so wonderful that anything from the 1980s would be my anthem.
There's got to be one.
No, there can't be one. There can't be one. It's like trying to pick your favorite child. You know, I don't have a favorite child. I have three children, right? But I can tell you what my favorite anthem is this week, because every week I do a show, I come up with some music for the show, and I just recorded my podcast last night. And so the theme music coming up is a classic 80s tune. Maybe you've heard of it. Do you want me to hum a few bars?
Okay, but if I don't guess it, it's me, not you, because I'm really bad at pop culture.
Okay, we're looking at a study of using naloxone in opioid overdoses. Okay, so that's the study of using Narcan.
Can I guess the song before you hum it?
Sure.
I'm Still Standing.
No.
Oh, okay.
I'll give you a bit. Okay, ready? I said a jitterbug. I said a jitterbug.
Yeah, I got it.
You put the boom boom into my heart. You send my soul sigh high when your loving starts. Jitterbug into my brain. It goes a bang, bang, bang till my feet do the same.
That's awesome. That's great. What a good note to end on, pun intended. Well, thanks so much, Ken. And we look forward to sharing your wise words with the world. And I hope I get to meet you in person sometime soon.
And if you're not feeling well and you don't think you can do it all, you're just like everybody else. Just reach out and ask for some help.
Great last words. Thanks, everybody.